You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Becky Campbell and our guest host, Willis Snow. You can find us on social media, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and on the Sound Girls website at soundgirls.org. Today, our spotlight guest interview is Freya Lawson. Freya is a live sound audio engineer based in London. With 8 years experience, her current role is as a monitor engineer for Muramasa. Did I say that right?
You did say that right.
Muramasa?
Yeah, Muramasa.
She has also worked with a PA as a PA systems tech and monitor tech for artists such as James Morrison, Take That, Deftones, and David Gilmour. Freya has also worked several different large-scale productions ranging from the London 2012 Olympic Games, Rugby World Cup 2015, and the NFL Games in London, and also TED Talks. Welcome, Freya.
Hi.
Hi, Freya. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, you guys. That was like the longest bio in the world. Sorry. It's a paragraph.
It's an awesome bio. I love it.
We've done longer ones, so it's okay. And normally Susan reads those because I tend to butcher them all, as you can tell. I'm like, did I even say that right? Yeah, so I'm still learning how to read.
That's aren't we all?
Cool. So Freya, as a monitor and systems tech, I have all sorts of questions. We have all sorts of questions for you about both of those things. But I have always been interested in system teching. How did you even get involved and get into sound and get into that world?
I get this question a lot, and it's always a really fun question because I did it because of going to university. I think like I had so many people who were telling me you don't need a degree to do this job. And for the most part, it's true, but the contacts and the people I met are kind of like what really started me off. So I did a degree course. I graduated in 2012, and I was really lucky because that was the Olympic year in London. And a lecturer of mine knew a really good engineer friend of mine, Colin Pink, and he was looking for younger volunteers to work as like media assistants and stuff in certain venues for certain certain parts of the Olympics, and invited a bunch of me and my third year friends to go to Canary Wharf and sit at a big massive table and wear suits and ask about what we wanted to do with our lives. And I ended up getting offered the position as an audio assistant at the O2 Arena for the gymnastics, and that was it. Yeah,
very cool.
Pretty neat. Well. Yeah.
So you kind of just fell into audio through that, and then where did you go from there as far as into system teching? How did that lead you into?
Oh, okay. With the people I was assisting, they were all from Britrow. And so I gave Britrow a call and said, hi, I did some work with a bunch of your guys and they were great. And I had really, had a really good time. And this is what I'm interested in pursuing. What do you reckon? And bless them, they were like, come on in. And then they never let me go. So they went freelance.
That's
great. What's Britrow?
So Britannia Row Productions are like a massive PA warehouse company within the UK. They're based in Twickenham. But they've recently merged with Claire Audio. So now it's kind of like a big global conglomerate, which is kind of cool. But I went into it going, oh, might like to mix something, and then came out freelance going, nope, I definitely want to do PA. But obviously they've got like loads of massive PA systems, a whole speaker department, an amp department, that kind of thing. I spent a lot of time there and kind of just fell in love with PA. To me, it was like, it just made more sense. I think I just, it goes in and it comes out. To me, it was like, it made a lot more sense. It was like, that's just really dumb, but it was like, just something that you can get creative with in your own way, as in you can design it and you can EQ it and you can do some crazy things. Also if you just want to stack it and go, for the most part, you can. So it's kind of like choosing your own creativity within it, which kind of drew me to it.
Oh, right on. So you can get like super in depth, or you can just kind of go.
Well, for the most part, you want to be like a little bit in depth, I reckon. But yeah, it was just, it just kind of more like, it was just more interesting. And then there's like the other parts of like the rigging of it, which sounds kind of boring on the surface, but actually to be able to rig something like that and understand what those riggers do up in the roof and how that works and the physics of it all. I did quite a lot of physics when I was at school, so I kind of found that really interesting too. And yeah, just being able to be a part of that and be like, I put all that metal in the sky today and I feel good about it. You know, that was quite a cool thing.
I was going to ask you, like, while you were in the warehouse and learning all that, I'm assuming you're hanging PAs in there and you're learning angles and curves and how everything switches together. Was that just all like by default, or did you have somebody that was teaching you?
Kind of a bit of both. I think that there was never really a massive opportunity to fly stuff within that warehouse. It wasn't, I think they can now they've adapted it a little bit more. But when I was there, it was a bit more like, you know, let's learn how this box actually works. You know, let's learn how, when you plug it up to an amp, what happens. Lots of it was repairing the boxes, nice. Which is actually, I found one of the best ways to learn how to, well, obviously repair it, but then also how the electronics work within it. You know, how, if you've blown HF driver and you need to know how to fix that on the road, the best place to start doing that is in the shop. So yeah, and they built this incredible speaker tester machine as well, which would give you like a readout of all the frequency responses within it, and so you'd know what to look for with, you know, in terms of like fault finding. So it's almost from the ground up kind of thing. And as I said, they had like a speaker department, an amp department, and a cable department, so you could learn literally from one end to the other in the shop.
That's great.
Which was kind of invaluable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, so. Good times.
Do you use like measurement software and excuse me, sorry, I got a little frog in my throat. Do you rely on measurement software or mostly your ears, like when you're tuning a PA and putting everything together, or even, you know, the hardware? Because a lot of these amps now have curves and stuff all in them and everything already programmed for their boxes. Like, what's your approach, I guess, is what I'm asking. Like, how do you go about doing all that?
I think a good mix is key. I think there has been a lot of talk of, you know, you mix with your ears and not with your eyes, which I think is fundamentally true. I think, you know, the golden rule, if it sounds wrong, it is wrong. It doesn't really matter what the software says. You know, if it sounds right, then, you know, everything's okay. But I do think it's important to work with the software that you are, you know, that is integrated within the manufacturer stuff. So SoundVision for acoustics and ArrayCalc for DMB and that kind of thing. Being able to understand the processing is also a huge part of it, because so much of modern PA teching is now about like IT networking and the processing that it all goes through and how it connects to the amps, etc. So that's really cool. But like the fundamentals of sound, having something like Smart to be able to visualize what you're hearing is really, really helpful, especially when you're just trying to get it right. If there's something that you're just not sure of, or you're in a weird building or a weird arena, or you're outside, maybe kind of just being able to nail that on the head quickly is really helpful. But I don't think it's something to be relied on. So if I do it, I'm going to go ahead and use what the manufacturers have given me for sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Especially when, like I said, if you're in a weird environment, but actually tuning it and mixing it, I'll use Smart on the side just to see and to make a trace as well, especially for sub alignment, that kind of thing. But mostly listening to it is your default.
How have those tools that you use, how have they developed over your time in the industry? How have they changed? Have any new features come out that make your job easier? Have things come out that actually make it more complex? What are your thoughts on that?
I think definitely things have been improved. Like, and everything's improving on such a massive level all the time as well. Sometimes it can be really hard to keep up. but with some of the new DMB stuff where they've got like array processing, that kind of thing, and you get to choose, is one of my favorite features on there, is you choose between power or glory. So it is basically like fidelity. It's like fidelity versus, you know, the actual power behind it. So it's incredible and it's really, really good fun. And actually it kind of brings a more exciting element to just, oh God, I've got to do a, you know, got to do a plot for this and put an array in there. But again, I think sometimes you can get a little bit too wrapped up in that, and you can do exactly what the computer tells you to do, but you could get there and it will sound like pants and you're just like, oh great, I did all that work for nothing. So using it wisely is important. But yeah, some of the new features of the technology that we use has been super helpful. But sometimes you just want it to just literally visualize what you're doing. So when you've got something like Smart, where you can just have an actual representation of what you're hearing, just even to the most basic level. Sometimes that's helpful too. So sometimes taking it back to the basics is even like occasionally I like to completely strip it down. And if, you know, given if I had my way, I'd go in there with a tape measure and basically measure it out. But we don't have time for that. So yeah. But.
Are you going into most of the places that you go on tour and things like that? Are you going into places that already have existing PAs? Or are you bringing in PA and then hanging it and, you know, doing the system tech?
Yeah, for the kind of jobs I do, the system tech, we are touring PA. A general sort of day-to-day for me as a system tech is I am working towards being the person in charge. That's the dream. But I'm still, you know, that person underneath. So just flying the PA, obviously getting to grips with the engineering part of it as and when I can, which is great. But yeah, for the most part, if I'm out there with a PA, it's because we're touring it and because the venue doesn't have it, or because the system that the venue has, the artist might not want, or the production company has spec'd a set system. So that kind of thing.
Cool. I was just wondering, cause when I'm, you know, we don't tour with the PA when I go out, with the girls, but it's, to go into another house where someone maybe hung a PA wrong, which I've been in those, and then try to system tech it.
Yeah.
And like all of my traces are coming back looking just wonky. And I'm like, what is all this weird friggin' phase crap? Like, and then, you know, to dial the subs in and then to put the front fills in or the underbelks or all these delays or whatever. And it just starts getting worse and worse and worse. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And at some point, sometimes I just forego the software and just start walking around the room and listening.
Literally start from scratch. Yeah.
Because it's just an anomaly I'm not going to be able to fix because of the way they hung the PA or whatever they did wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had occasions like that. But I think again, I have never been that person in charge of the system for that day or something like that. I've always have been person underneath that person. So, but I've experienced it with them, and I've worked with people who've had the same thing happen, and it can be a little bit disheartening because you go in there like, yay, PA, I'd have to do that today, great. And then you get it and you're like, what is this? Oh, yeah. Okay. But then I think it's like different people's perspectives on it too. And sometimes people get in some venues you can go to and they might, you know, they've always had it that way. It just works. And you've come from a completely different background, or you're touring and you're like, oh, I'm not sure it's you know, it's like sometimes it can be. But I have actually done gigs in venues where they've got house delays, let's say. So I'm bringing the main PA and delays are already in there, and you just tap into their delay system. And even then you're like, oh, really? Can I just, and for the most part, I feel just like, oh, you know, I might want to change X, Y, Z. They might be all right with it. So yeah, it's kind of give and take.
So what are the challenges of getting multiple manufacturers' boxes to work together? If like when you're bringing in that PA and working with house delays, what are some tricks that you have to get those things to talk to each other effectively?
At that moment, it's much more of a networking thing. It's your processes and your AMs and that kind of thing. So getting everything online, to be honest, if they're two different like amp manufacturers or two different processing manufacturers, it's going to be a little bit more tricky than you're used to. But as long as you can have something that roughly represents the EQ that they have maybe already had preset for their delays to visualize, you can sort of transfer that over to your main system. Or actually probably vice versa, because if you're bringing in a main, you want the delays to sound like the main and not the other way around. You're kind of at the mercy of whatever they have, which is a little bit like, but I think it's more of a establishing a relationship with someone and like being able to ask for those kinds of things. I think some people can like struggle with that a little bit. I know I have, and probably might feel a bit bad, like stepping on someone's toes a little bit.
Yeah, you're
know?
In their world. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a bit like, oh, I'm really sorry. But, you know, it's your artist, it's your band, it's your tour, it's your job. And for the most part, people are accommodating. So I think, yeah, the tips and tricks, if you ask nicely and you can get to see what they've done. You can, you know, you can like transfer that quite quickly, or you can get a better understanding of the settings that they've put in and why they've done that. And especially if you've already got like a plot of the room, you can understand, or you can kind of translate what they've done in terms of their delays, where they're pointing, that kind of, and especially box manufacturer as well. If it's something you're familiar with, you could, if they're nice enough, they might even show you, you know, their like array calc or their sound vision file for it or something like that. So yeah, just that's more of a people skills thing, I think, just being able to like, give me your information, please.
Yeah.
go
ahead, Willa.
Oh, sorry. So I work for a concert hall in Austin, Texas, and I am I'm one of the heads of the audio crew. And part of my job is working with the touring front of house engineer and coordinating with them on our house system and getting their system to talk to ours. So in your experience, Freya, what do you expect from a house tech? Like how do you like to be approached? What kind of communication do you like to have? How do you approach a house tech, and what's that conversation like?
I think kind of having been on both ends, like I've never been a house tech per se, but you know, when you've got your festival stage and it's your front of house or it's your monitor world, and then you get guests coming in. So I've kind of been on both sides of it. So I'd probably approach it exactly the same. I would, if you can, get some communication going before you arrive, like send an email just to be like, hey, this is what we have, this is what we want, blah blah blah. So for front of house, you're kind of looking to be like, well, you know, I want left right sub fill feeds, please. Or, you know, what's sure. going on, what system do you have, what are we allowed to do with it, can we move it, no, fine, that's great, what can we do with it, can we see what you've done already, like if you're using a lake, could you just give us a blank file, we could have a, you know, blank page on the lake, we can go through on that, that would be amazing. Stuff like that, really. If it's like stage end, being like a monitor tech and a monitor engineer, if I go into a venue, I'm always like, hi, it's me. I don't know if you got all of the stuff at production sent over, but basically I need X, Y, Z. I need to know where the multi run is. I need to know if I have a multi, am I going to run it here or can I use your multi? Where's the power, please? What RF could potentially be an issue in your venue, especially if it's a theater or if it's in Italy somewhere where RF is a minor. I think I kind of come at it from both mindsets, but that's because I've been both. So I would say, if I hadn't, I think I just want someone to be really forthright with the information, really transparent about it, really like, I don't expect anyone to be like bending over backwards for me or anything like that, but just to say hello and then tell me where the coffee is and then I'm fine.
Right.
Just like a reasonable collaboration.
Just being a nice, friendly person with the information that you need. Like it's not. So I think sometimes some people can get a bit like freaked out, like, oh, a new person is coming in, or oh my God, I've never been here before. And it's a bit like, oh, yeah. I don't know who to talk to. But that's the first thing you want to know if you come off a tour bus is like, who do I need to talk to about this? Where's the coffee? Where's the bathroom? Where's the catering? And how are you? You know what I mean? So just to be human is quite nice.
I was going to say, oh, I think sure. I had that question in. And also, how do I get to front of house? That's it.
Yeah.
How do I get from print A to
like
point
I can
B
stage dive,
dying?
But I just woke up.
Yeah, right.
It's 8 o'clock in the morning. I do not have time for this right
Literally
now.
No, I just rolled out a bunk. I'm not rolling off a stage. Right?
Yeah. There's always some weird secret passageway to get to where you have to go. And it's always the most confusing route, you know? And I'm like, how do people not build that? Like A to Z, just let's get there. But yeah, especially some of these old theater houses, right? Like all the weird stuff you have to climb through and go over just to get to your position.
Oh, I love those things.
Me too. And I love the way some of the sounds are in those older rooms too. I mean, some of them are scary as hell, but to be able to manipulate it to sound the way you want it, I think is one of the coolest parts about our jobs, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely. And you've kind of taken on the role of becoming a monitor engineer now, as well as a system tech.
Yeah.
So, I was like, did your people skills just kind of lead you into that, you know? Because you definitely have to have those.
Well, judging by my technical ability, I hope so, because you didn't hire me for that. Yeah. Yeah, like, that I think is one of the roles where you have to have some pretty decent people skills. You have to be able to completely understand where so many other people are coming from in terms of like mentality and if they've had a good night's sleep, or, you know, you need to get a job done, but you also need to be a person about it. So yeah, it's
I feel like it's easy to fall from a systems tech into a front of house engineer, but to go from a systems tech to a monitor engineer is kind of interesting. And so I have a million questions about that.
Yeah. Go ahead. Absolutely. It's completely bizarre.
Okay. That was actually one of the first questions, is because you're not listening to the full PA or the full range now that you're on stage, unless you're doing in-ear monitors, which are still not quite full range. So, I mean, some maybe, but yours probably aren't, or the main artists are probably, you know, you don't have the sub kicking and all that other fun stuff in there. So how does that change your mindset? Like, how do you have to... You've got to have a mind switch in there somewhere.
It's really odd. I'm not going to lie. It was such a bizarre transition, but it kind of made sense from the gigs I was suddenly getting. So I kind of put everything I had into doing systems. And it's sort of, for a minute, I just wasn't going the way that I really wanted it to go. So I took a step back, and I was freelance at that point, and I took on some work with some other companies and fell into a position of being a monitor tech for a couple of their artists. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty cool. I'm about this. Because for so long, I'd focused on PAs and amps and all of the networking behind it and the processing, and it's really in depth. So, you know, it's huge. It's a massive, massive undertaking. So I understand why people only do one thing now, you know? I'm like, well, why didn't I think of that? But so I was like, well, that's where you're going wrong, really. Being able, I think, to harness the right, okay, actually, I can put a control package together and I will happily prep you an A and a B rig by myself, XYZ. I will do it all. I don't care. That was, I think, for me, it was a much needed lesson in confidence in my work. And then also, you've got to nail the other bit down too. You've got to know what's going on stage, as you know, what's coming through the multis to where and to who and to why. Like, you have to know that too. So, taking on a monitor tech role initially was absolutely terrifying, but it's probably one of the best things I've done in my career, I think, because it gave me, you know, so much more than just this is how a PA works and or I might be able to catch a stage if I try hard enough. So doing it now, I think it's actually been really nice because you've got the understanding of what has to happen with a PA and what the front of house guy is going to need. But then you also know how it interacts with what goes on stage. So when I work as a monitor engineer now, I'm constantly having conversations with our front of house engineer, like, can I do XYZ? What do you need from XYZ? And it's actually been great because we've looked into things like what I'm doing in terms of the processing on somebody's microphone through their ears, which may affect front of house, which I never would have considered before. And when we're trialing out different, you know, mic heads for wireless mics, that kind of thing, Luigi, our front of house guy, could be like, well, I don't like that at all. And I'd be like, oh, actually, I really like it. So, you know, compromise there, or the other way around. Or he might be like, you know, what compression are you putting on here? Because I feel like she's not giving it enough. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you know. So it's been really interesting to learn that way and to have both kind of mindsets going. I'm lucky on Muramasa because it's a very quiet stage. The only thing we have are subs on stage, which I love. Luigi doesn't love.
I was going to say, ouch, as a front of house engineer. That's a world of fun.
But no, it's okay. Like, because we're open to having that conversation now. I'm open to be like, you know, is this too much? And he could be like, yes, no, give it more. Don't give it anything, you know. And we're all on ears. The band are all on ears. The thing we have is a butt kicker for our drummer. So it's a very quiet stage. But again, the music that Muramasa makes is... some of it can be quite sub heavy and they want to feel that. So sometimes we do need a little bit of bass on that stage. So we have to compromise. But again, it's like being open to have that conversation and being able to work together about it has been quite a nice thing. Yeah.
So since they're on ears, did you work with each artist within Muramasa to build their mix for them? How did you have that conversation?
We actually, this was another like super lucky scenario, like quite a lovely scenario to be in. All the band were new together. It was the first time they'd had a dedicated monitor engineer, and we had 3 weeks of rehearsal, and it was lovely. So it took a little while for us to be able to actually all be on the same ears because we were waiting for them to all be shipped over. So While we were waiting for that, everybody was on a completely different set of ears. So some people were like just people on like 215, some people were on like older versions of models, etc. And that was a bit weird, but for then. So we actually went through song by song in the end, and we had not a zeroed mix, but a really rough mix that I dialed in for everybody. And then we just went around and we're like, okay, from this song, what do you need, X, Y, Z? And then we were also, we work quite a lot with Kemper patches for all the guitars as well.
Cool.
And the keys. And so we wanted to make sure that we started off at the right zero point for those as well. So it was kind of encompassing everything at once, which again, was actually quite a nice position to be in. It's a very unique position. I've never had that, you know, on anyone before to build it up from scratch like that. So it meant that we could get a you know, a really good level for everything all at once, song by song, and to make sure that everybody was. So that was actually really nice, because as well as that, it meant that I could get to grips with every single mix that I was doing, make myself one, make the manager one, make my techs one, you know, that kind of thing. I had time to factor in, you know, we've got 9 talkback mics. So it's pretty crazy. It worked. It does work. We have a nice matrix system now, which I
what's your input list that you're working with?
I don't have it on me. We're just at like 62 now, or are we at 54? We're at quite a lot. We're I think maybe we're 54. I think that's it. So 9 of which are talkbacks, but it works for what we do. It's nice to be able to have communication with the band. And I've matrixed it so certain people can hear certain people. I can hear everybody all the time. Tex can hear whoever they want to hear. And when we ever get back out there, I've been fiddling around with some other bits of the hardware over here so that we can do it ourselves, so it should be pretty fun. But yeah, the input list is pretty wild. I'll see if I can bring it up, actually.
Are you on a DigiCo while you're doing that?
I am.
I asked is I just assumed you were because of your what is your YouTube thing?
Locked up with the DigiCo
on YouTube. You guys should go watch that. It's really fun. And it's a cool idea, cool series, locked up with a DigiCo. So you have a DigiCo there in your room, I assume?
I actually have one now. My living room.
I'm a little jealous.
I'll spend it.
Send me a DigiCo.
I have a SD12 for touring, and I've been on the SD11 occasionally as well for certain smaller shows. When we did our first little run of shows at the beginning, just like almost like warm-up shows at smaller venues in the UK, we took the 11, and it was great because, you know, the footprint's really small compared. Well, it's half of a 12 almost. But I was finding that for, say, things like my macros and like another screen is quite nice sometimes. Being able to just more banks of faders is always good. I think they're great, though. I do love them, and bless them. I've now got an SD11 sat in my living room where I've been making terrible videos about how to do what. So
I love the videos. I thought they were great. I have an SD10 that we tour with and at front of house, and then I think a 9 at monitors. So is that the little red one? I always forget.
SD9 is the red snapper, yeah. That's the red guy, yeah.
Yeah. So our monitor engineer uses that one. I kind of got thrown into DigiWorld. I hadn't really played around with them too much, you know, so I got thrown on that pretty fast. And the more I dive into it, the more I'm in love with it, you know, I'm not looking for any manufacturers to box me out by any means whatsoever, but my favorite thing is the Digi with a DMB rig. And I don't know why I like that so much, but that front of house to me, like when I see a DMB hanging in whatever house I go into and I'm like, oh, yay. You know, it just like back in the day doing rock and roll, if I had a Midas and a JBL rig on a rock show, it would be the same. You know, I'd be like, ah, oh, yes, warm preamps and screaming, you know, like cabs for guitars, you know. So I guess all of that. What is, if you want to disclose what your favorite console /PA setup is, I'd love to hear that. But you don't have to disclose it, and we can edit it out.
oh no, it's fine. Well, I'm definitely a Digico girl.
Right.
Probably made that obvious by now. But well, I guess for me, I'm only mixing monitors, so for me, having a Digico and monitors is great. A 12, please. Thank you very much. There are other models available, but no, I like the 12. I think it's like it's perfect. It's just like that for me. It's just the right size. It has just the right amount of fader banks. It has everything I need. And if I've got, you know, an external screen, even better. In terms of PA, I am a huge fan of VDOSK. To me, it's like the king of PA, and I miss it a lot. It sounds so good. It's like the vinyl of PA. Like it's, I love VDOSK, but I'm aware that it's kind of going into retirement, which it's is kind sad. Of sad.
Yeah, aww. I agree.
It's really sad. But I think GSL or KSL from DNB currently is my favorite. That is an absolute beast of a box. Like I toured KSL all of, well, for the majority of last year with Take That. We were doing arenas and stadiums in the UK, and that box throws. Yeah. It's incredible. I had, you know, we're doing some arenas without delays in because it just didn't need it. It was absolutely insane. And it flies so nicely and it drops so nicely and it just makes sense. It's just one of those boxes where you're like, they have so thought yeah. about this. Like, it sounds mega. It's beautiful. Yeah, I love them. They're great. So, yeah, if I could, you know, have a choice as a PA tech, definitely flying the K and the G would be lovely. Listening, VDOSK, and mixing, definitely an SD-12, I think. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks for sharing. While we're on the vein of no your worries. Favorite things, what is your favorite go-to beverage?
Oh, hey, alcoholic or non?
Let's do both. Let's go for both.
Oh, okay. Pina colada.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good one.
Gotta do that. It's a fancy one of those.
You'll need to come over to Florida and sit on the beach with me. I'll get you one yes. right now.
Absolutely. Yes, please. Sometimes you just want some really nice water. That sounds really lame, doesn't it? But sometimes you're just like, God, if you've had tap water everywhere in Europe and you're like, ugh, or just bottled water for days, and then someone comes along with this like beautiful sparkling water in a bottle, you're like, ah, oh, thank God for that. That's the most bougie thing I've ever said.
Sparkling water. We'll take it.
No, like fizzy water is the best though. Like, especially like here in Texas, we've got that Topo Chico and it is all about the Topo, and that is like the best fizzy water in the world, in my humble opinion.
I mean,
like,
yeah, I'm with
you
that.
You can't go wrong. It's so dude, good.
Water with bubbles is nothing better thing. Than like that's what you gotta have.
It is.
It's just so, it's refreshing and it's just like delightful. It kind of wakes you up and it's like, oh, bubbles.
I know, that's it. And then there's nothing better than if you've had like a really hot, sweaty load in, you're like, I've got 5 minutes. I need a drink. Damn, gonna have some.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's self care right there. Fizzy water. Agreed. After a sweaty load in.
Thanks.
Freya, do you have a roadie nickname?
Oh, I have several. Right, I wrote them down. Where are they? Okay, here we go. So most of the time, I just get called Fraze because saying Freya is hard and there's two syllables there. You know, who wants two syllables when you've not had any sleep? So Fraze works. Blondie, I get called a lot. I did have pink hair, so then I was Pinky.
Nice.
The originality is unbelievable.
I was like, everybody's going for the originality there.
Mm-hmm. What else? Oh, I get called Freybay a lot because it rhymes. That's me going, I've got a lot, and it's probably like four. I think that was about it. Or boss. I don't like being called boss. I don't like being anybody's boss. I'm not anyone's boss. I'm my boss, but no one else's boss. So that's kind of weird. Yeah, that's it. That's kind of it.
That's awesome. I like roadie nicknames. That's every time I ask somebody, they basically like backtrack, like, wait a minute. And I'm like, I know there's one there, you know, like, because everybody on the crew calls you something other than what your name is. Just like you said, the one syllable that you can yell across the stage, you know, like whatever that is. Like,
yeah. Hi,
and it's
me.
Funny. Like there'll be some situations and different places where you work too. You know, so I'll like, if I'm on a, live show or if I'm on an installation somewhere, my install guys call me something different than my life's, you know, just from whatever way I'm screwed up usually is where I get the nickname. So I always have to ask somebody else if they have that. Like one of the guys I've worked with for 20 years calls me backwards Becky because 20 years ago I handed him a cable backwards. I mean, that long ago, but that one stuck for a while just so they can bust my chops, you know, but that's brilliant. It's funny.
I do love tour nicknames though. That is one of my favorite things is when it sticks forever and you're just like, oh yeah, here we go. You know, but then you get the people who are like my self-appointed tour name. It's like, no. You get the tour name. You don't get to choose what it is.
You're a bequeath.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you can't give your own tour nickname. That just doesn't work.
No. Hey, what's going on there then? All right.
I tend to give all of my crew nicknames as soon as they mess something up. They'll get one right away. One guy, we could not come up with a nickname for this one dude. And every time we go out to eat, for some reason that week, he kept ordering pork chops. So that's what we started calling him, was pork chop. And he got so mad about it. He was like, I'm not a pork chop. And I was like, do you have some unresolved issues from middle school there? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to like pick on you. Like it was just funny. We picked on him.
The childhood trauma. But I was like,
we just triggered him somehow, y'all. Maybe we should change that name. Then he was like, I don't know. It just made me feel insecure. I was like, you're so cute. Okay. So
him.
We don't call him pork chop anymore.
No, fair enough.
Do you have any that were probably like, oh my gosh, gigs?
That was never, I've had, oof. Yeah. one of my first professional incidences of mixing monitors for someone was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And this was a few years ago. Like this was recent as well. Like I was putting PA in for a company in Brixton Academy, and it's kind of part and parcel. If you're a PA tech, you might also get involved in the support bands because you're there, you know, you've supplied the kit. You're going to help out. It's kind of what you do. And it's also a good chance to learn. I don't think anyone should knock an opportunity like that. It just be like, oh, well, you know, you might not get paid extra. You might, who knows? It doesn't really matter. You've got an opportunity and it's there in front of you. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll totally do this. Got all fired up, was kind of terrified. Oh my gosh. And I'm on a PM5D and I know that some people adore the PM5D. I hate the PM5D. I'm sorry, Yamaha. I'm so sorry.
I grew up in monitor world on that console. Oh, but I'm also that old, so like
I mean I've been around them for a really long time. I've just never, you know, had a nice relationship with them.
Once you're on a Digi and then you go back to the PM5D also, that's just nightmarish.
Yeah. It was at that point I was teching, but I was teching with someone with a CR5. So it's slightly different. It's like the same, same, but different, you know, and it was the gain. The gain got me good. And I was just all over the shop and I was terrified. I was like, I have never screwed up as bad as this before in my life. Oh my goodness. Like they're like, this doesn't work. This is too loud. Oh my God. And I was like, I am so sorry. It was terrifying. I mean, lesson learned. Yeah. I won't do that again.
Sure.
Sometimes that has to happen. You can't go through like your entire career without seriously screwing up like that. You got
that's
learn,
a good lesson,
you
know, to learn because that console has some headroom for days. And if you can wrangle it, you can wrangle anything, you know.
Well, that's what I mean. I was so sure that I had it right, and then I was like, oh my God, I don't have this right at all, and it's on. I just remember standing there, like, swearing at it. And I don't know, you see some poor person from the support band's, like, photography crew. He's like, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Just pressing anything that looked good at that point. I was just like, just having all, right. I don't know.
I think we've all had those moments. Yeah. But, right, if you don't have those moments, then, you know,
How are you gonna learn? Right? How are you gonna get better?
how are you gonna learn to like manage feeling like that as well? You know, like, because I might still go on a gig now and be like, holy crap, I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, but you can't let that show. I can't stand and swear at the board anymore. Yeah. I've actually got to own the situation and make something good come of it, and actually try and do my job as opposed to just having a meltdown. So that was Oh, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life.
All right. Well, let's not dwell on that. Let's talk about your best gig that you can think about and see if we can wipe that out a little bit.
Oh God. Can I have two?
Yes.
Maybe five. I don't know. So, okay. I'll try to narrow it down. So my first ever freelance gig, which was like a big deal. Cause it's like, you know, I'm a proper person in the industry now because I'm my own boss, and I will never ever be able to top this gig because it's never going to happen again. David Gilmour in Pompeii. I put the PA in with a colleague of mine while the touring crew came in from somewhere else with a control package, and it was hands down the most incredible thing I've ever been a part of in my life. I was like, that's it, I'm gonna quit. I was like, I'm done.
I've hit the pinnacle.
I will quit while I'm ahead. Literally. And it was kind of it was like a legacy thing almost as well, because it was for Britannuary, who started with Pink Floyd. And then we're in Pompeii where they shot that iconic music video.
That's so crazy.
And it was unbelievable. I was actually watching it a few days ago with some friends, and I was just like, wow, how on earth? Like, this is insane. So that was just for like jaw-dropping awe. It was like, wow. Another amazing one. I'd had like a really couple of years ago where I got dropped from a tour, and I was really bummed about it. And I was trying to figure out, you know, how I can be better and how I can improve my career and that kind of thing. And ended up going out as a monitor tech for Deftones. It was literally for like not even that many shows, but it was one of those things where it's like, right, we want an A and a B rig because we're going from here to here. So that's all got to get done. The crew are flying in from the States. They don't have their regular monitor guy. That's cool. They don't have their regular backline guys. That's cool. They don't have their regular monitor tech. That's going to be me. And it's all going to be crazy. But it was the most amazing confidence boost I've ever had in my entire life. And everyone's always like, oh, you should never work with your heroes. And I did. And I was like, yeah, it was so good.
I was like, I'm the opposite of that. Work with your heroes if you can. You're going to learn something, if nothing else, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was like sensational. It was like literally for the tiniest amount of shows. But to be a part of that and with a bunch of people who I've like idolized, and I was just like, oh my God. And like, I don't know if you're aware of like their performances, but we were doing Hellfest in France, and there's like a massive like thrust on the front of the stage, like 20 meters or so. And when Chino kind of goes between playing guitar and having a handheld and having a wired mic and just running around like a little crazy dude, and I was like, well, that's my job now. I gotta go get this XLR so it's not tangled halfway down the stage and like covered in lights or whatever. And it was terrifying because I was like, oh, that's totally my job, isn't it? Oh, better go, you know. Oh God. And like, it was all good, and like, you gotta make sure it's all coiled up obviously so you can go grab it again after the next song. And I remember him coming off and giving me a massive hug and being like, I am so proud of you, you did such a good job. And I was like, oh my God. Oh,
you can die a happy woman now.
Absolutely. And have a little cry in the corner now. It's okay, everyone, I'm fine.
Right.
But yeah, that was sick. And now, like working with Mirror Master now, because we're such a little, like, we've all done it together. We're on this little journey together. And you'll have that one moment in a show where you're like, you're vibing, you know, you're having a little dance as you're mixing. And then, like, my PM next to me is like, yeah, we're all having a dance. So then our tech over there is like, yeah, the battle, like, yeah. And it's just, that's the coolest thing. Like, that moment, everyone's having a good time. And you're like, yeah, this is the best thing I've ever done.
I love that moment. Too, where you all gel together and you realize like, oh yeah, we're part of this team and that thing. Yeah. It's like there's not much else that beats that feeling either.
There's nothing. I genuinely don't think there is. People fly out, you know, jump out of planes all the time, and I'm like, that has not got a patch on this.
I agree. I was like, I haven't swam with the sharks. Well, I mean, I have, but not like the way I want to, like in a deep, like I want to swim with sharks. I mean, I swim in the ocean, so there's sharks in there, but I mean, I want to like swim with sharks. And I think that might be like a close second, you know?
but out there for sure. Definitely.
Just because of the adrenaline rush, if nothing else.
Exactly. And then, you know, everyone finishes afterwards. And my favorite thing about these guys is, like, somebody will always come out of the dressing room with a beer for you when you're packing down just to say thank you. And you're like, oh, my God, aww. I literally worked for you. It's just so sweet. Like, it's the nicest. Aww. Oh man, I
know.
That.
I was just, we all kind of had like this moment where we were like, oh, we miss our lives.
I know.
They'll be back though, y'all. They'll be back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They will.
Hanging in there while we can though and talking about crazy things like this. And so.
Great. This has been so nice. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you
so this has been much wonderful. For joining us, Freya. I really appreciate you. And thanks for taking the time out of your day to talk to us about fun things.
Not doing much else. So. Right? No, I'm kidding. This has been
cool. So I'll call you tomorrow.
You guys like, do you want to do it? I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Just make a whole series.
That's a group text.
Literally, I've been excited about this since you guys emailed. I was like, oh my God, yes.
Yay, I'm so glad. The Sound Girls mission is to inspire and empower the next generation of women in audio. Our mission is to create a supportive and inclusive community for women, non-binary people, people of color, and all marginalized groups working in audio and music production, providing the tools, knowledge, and support to further their careers.
Thank you for listening to the Sound Girls podcast. You can find out more information on the website, soundgirls.org.